Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you didn't hear it in part one, we did an introduction on the subject of fish oil. Fish oil being disrespected in the press lately. It seems to be fashionable to bash supplements, and fish oil has come under some scrutiny. But the studies are of dubious quality, and there's a vast amount of information about the benefits of omega-3 fatty acids. With us today is Jolie Root, who's medical educator for Carlson Laboratories. They make a very, very fine line of omega-3 products, as well as other supplements. Excuse me. And so let's talk about fish oil alternatives. Popular these days is krill oil. Now, actually, I have something new to add to the discussion about krill oil. Yesterday, I spoke to Jenna Henderson, who is a naturopath who is an expert on renal disease, kidney disease. She herself has undergone dialysis, has had a kidney transplant. So she knows from her research as well as her own personal experience about the right kinds of nutrients and potentially the wrong kinds of nutrients to take if you're suffering from kidney disease. And she pointed out that krill oil may be a less good alternative for patients who have kidney disease, for the reason is they contain a lot of phospholipids, and phosphorus tends to be in excess. It builds up to harmful levels in patients who don't have adequate kidney function. So I didn't, just a little factoid, I didn't know that about, you can put that into your, fact inventory on krill oil. But you have some other things to say about the claims that krill oil is more efficacious or more bioavailable than conventional fish oil, right?
Well, that's very interesting, the notion that the phosphorus from the phospholipid structure of the krill omega-3 might be problematic for someone who doesn't have optimal kidney function. So I will file that away in my list of possible.
Because we know that fish oil is good if you have renal disease, and it you can really reduce inflammation if you have an autoimmune disorder. It's safe to take in patients on dialysis and transplant patients as well. So, the claims are, and there's a lot of money behind it. There's a big advertising push behind krill oil. And the advantage is that they say you can take less krill oil and it gets into your cells better. That's the claim. And plus it has the added benefit of the astaxanthin in there. And so what say you?
Well, I like astaxanthin, and it's a good antioxidant. And so I think that getting some astaxanthin is probably a great idea. And I think getting dietary astaxanthin or even
from salmon, which has pink flesh.
Sure. Shrimp, some of the different sources of astaxanthin are available for us to have it at the dinner table. But the beef that I have, the argument that I have with the statements that are made about krill, and, we can, without bashing anybody specific on television, you can hardly avoid the commercials about the little red pill, and it's red because of the astaxanthin, mm-hmm. The little red pill that replaces your fish oil. And that is such a deceptive, and it's deceitful and harmful to spread that message because it's false. Because what I said earlier about omega-3s applies whether it is sourced from krill or whether it is sourced from algae or whether it is sourced from fish. The EPA and the DHA have to be taken in an adequate amount, which for adults is going to be somewhere around 1,500, 2,000 milligrams, in order to achieve a target omega-3 level as measured by an omega-3 index measurement, which is an analysis of red blood cells where they look at all the fats that are there and then see what percentage to the total is EPA and DHA, and in some people in North America, it's zero, but the target is 8%.
It's a test commonly performed by integrative physicians like yours truly. And it's kind of a teaching moment, because you can take, say, for example, you get a kid coming in who has attention deficit disorder, and you do a dietary mm-hmm. history, and all they eat is basically, chicken McNuggets and Big Macs and
macaroni
French fries
and mac
and cheese and, you know, Halloween candy. And then you do a blood test, and it reveals that they have a horrible omega-3 index. They have lots of omega-6, not enough omega-3. And no wonder their brains aren't working well. Conversely, you can look at older individuals who have, dementia, similar pattern, people with dry skin, inflammatory disorders. You show people those results, and that's a real motivator to get them to start taking fish oil.
It is. I'll share something. The Carlson team, we meet every couple of years with the whole company, and so we had all of the reps. It was a sales meeting, and they decided to launch a contest and see what our baseline omega-3 levels were, and then among the sales personnel, and that doesn't include me, the person that most improves it over through the end of the year, through the end of this December, they're going to give two of them and their spouses trips to our fish oil facility in Norway. And it's
Wait,
fantastic.
I want to get in on some of that action.
I know you want to go. I'm telling you. If you ever decide to go, let me know when, and maybe I'll try to get along with you. But it is, first of all, beautiful. If you want to go the end of May or sometime in June, and so it's just, it's one of the most beautiful countries I've ever visited, but to come
to the facility where we do the
oh, just incredible. So anyway, long story short, we all got our omega-3 index measured, and what was astonishing to me, Dr. Hoffman, we are, some of us, more than 20 years at Carlson. You know, Carlson's the kind of company that if you get a position there, you're going to love it and you're going to stay. People don't leave. And so we've got a lot of people that are 15 years, 18 years, 20 years, and even some of the short timers are now 5 or 6 years. The point is, we're in the business, and there were so many people that were below the target levels. It really was astounding.
It was a wake up call.
There's everywhere to go.
It was a teachable moment, and you got on board with a little more aggressive supplementation.
Correct.
Yeah.
So back to the krill.
Yeah.
The krill capsule, the disservice about saying the little krill, this one little red capsule replaces your fish oil, is that most of those krill capsules have less than 200 milligrams, and many, many of them have less than 100 milligrams of EPA and DHA. So if I just said, you need 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams, how many capsules of those krill are you going to have to take? And you're now looking at $10 or $15 a day to get a meaningful amount of omega-3, when you could instead just use a highly purified, very potent couple of soft gels from Carlson and get the same amount for well under $1 a day.
And by the way, I've looked at some of the studies that they are used to claim the greater efficacy of krill oil and its increased bioavailability. And they're very small studies, and they're very poorly done, and they're not replicated. There's maybe, this is all based on maybe, you know, two or three studies that really are, you know, can't hold a candle to the, like you said, 30,000 plus studies on regular marine omega-3 fatty acids.
Precisely. And when we have done studies, because now there have been some studies that have been done where we take ethyl ester, which is one form of concentrated fish oil, triglyceride, which is another form of fish oil that you find in supplements. You find supplements should be labeled as to which of these they are, or you use phospholipid and then you're looking at blood levels and you're looking at, you know, how much does it take to accomplish that target 8% or 8 to 12%. The same amount of any of the forms is required. So the argument that the krill is more efficacious as far as reaching the target blood level, which is really how we view things now with omega-3, that argument just does not hold water. It's false. And why would a person spend 10 or 15 times too much? To get, and generally when somebody takes the krill capsule, they think they can take the one capsule, so they're taking the one capsule, so they're getting a fraction of what they need, which is a complete disservice. And then, what about the penguins? What about the whale? What about the entire ocean
pool? Yeah, it's the sustainability of krill, because krill is like the food for a whole ecosystem in the subarctic regions, right? That's like the South Atlantic.
Right.
And where a lot of the krill is harvested, and blue whales subsist on krill. Those huge animals, constantly swimming, they sift the water for these tiny organisms, that are like tiny, tiny shrimp. And, they manage to maintain their bulk of multiple tons by consuming massive amounts of krill. The krill goes away, so too do those, beautiful animals. So, switching gears slightly, what about, say you're a vegetarian, and you don't want to take something from fish. Flax oil, is that a good alternative, or are there other options for vegetarians?
Not the right thing. And the reason is this. Flax provides ALA, which is the shorter cousin, if you will. It's part of the omega-3 family, but it's a shorter omega-3 in, as far as carbon length, and that's just the fat structure, the way that fatty acids are structured. The EPA and DHA that have all the studies, the wealth of science, those are the longer chain omega-3s. And the idea was, and this is what we all learned in Nutrition 101 in college back in the dark ages, is that the ALA would elongate into EPA and DHA to a certain percentage. And so you could just take the flax or the chia or the plant omega-3s and you'd make your own EPA and DHA. But we now have determined that that is only fractionally possible.
Yeah. And it seems to be there's a genetic component to that too. There's some populations and some lineages have evolved the ability to a greater extent to make that transformation and others just barely make it at all. So it's an enzymatic step that some people are equipped to make and some people are not. And it's hard to know if you can make it without, say, doing a blood test to see what your levels are. I've done a lot of tests on vegetarians and some have modest amounts of EPA, DHA, which they get from, conversion, and others have really abysmal levels.
Yes. And there's another confounding factor, which is if you have a much higher omega-6 than omega-3 intake, which is measurable on that omega-3 index test as well, once you go beyond about 4-to-1 omega-6 to omega-3, then the desaturation and elongase enzymes that convert that ALA to EPA and DHA are not functioning.
You inhibit
and
them.
So
yeah.
There's a, yes, you're inhibiting them
you're
with
gumming
high
up the works.
Intake of omega-6.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what is true about North America, we're anywhere from 10-to-1 omega-6 to omega-3 to, I think that Dr. Hiblin did a study on returning Armed Forces members, and they were 25 times higher in omega-6 than omega-3.
Now, that kind of leads into a very interesting subject, which is the mood effects of the omega-3s, because we know there's a big problem in the armed services that returning vets have a high incidence of PTSD, they have a high incidence of depression, and unfortunately have a very high incidence of suicide. It's a big problem for the VA, and the VA is trying to deal with it with drugs and counseling. But could it be that there's a dietary component? I mean, K rations and, field rations and, army and military food, bereft of EPA because it's expensive. It's hard to get salmon when you're in Afghanistan.
There don't seem to be very many swimming by, do there?
No, indeed.
But let's just go back to the vegetarians for just a second and tell them that you can get DHA from algal-based algae,
okay.
Meaning that there is a non-fish opportunity, and they also are working on some corn-derived versions, and I'm certainly hoping that they're going to be using non-GMO corn, but, you know, that remains to be seen. But we are cognizant of the fact that aside from people's personal preference to maybe not eat fish or a fish-derived supplement if you're a vegan or you're a vegetarian, there also is this issue of, are there enough fish,
right,
really, as
sustainability of the fish population. Yeah, right.
Correct.
Because
so the algal-derived supplements are becoming more affordable, and there seem to be more and more of them coming into the marketplace. So there are answers for vegetarians. But to the mood and to the military, one of the eminent omega-3 researchers is Captain Joseph Hiblin, who is not just a renowned omega-3 researcher, but he's a captain in the Army, and he works at NIH, and he's very dedicated to the idea of helping the military members have DHA available while they're deployed, but also when they come back, and helping the VA understand how to treat PTSD and the mood issues, and that the DHA itself really reduces suicidal ideation. So we do have some people in some policy influencing positions that I'm hoping will be able to influence our military members and our veterans that are returning, who deserve the best of care for what they've done for our country. And, you know, nutrition, in my opinion, is the best of care. So I do think that for depression, DHA and EPA. EPA for many forms of depression is even more important than the DHA. So I see the omega-3 conversation as something that it rankles me when there's a disservice to it, because when we see these population-wide low levels of omega-3, I can't help but connect our ADHD epidemic, our children who suicide is at very high levels in people under the age of 19, which is heartbreaking to me. And the aggression and the hostility and the violence and the road rage and the, you know, oh my gosh, the political anger even, and the ginning up of political anger, the usefulness of anger to motivate people in one direction or another politically. I can't help but think that the low levels of omega-3 and also vitamin D are playing a role, that if our population was better nourished, we would be better able to make better judgments, and we would be more stable.
Well, I have a good idea for a promotion for Carlson. You should be giving out free samples at the polling places, you know, just, you know, so people could be a little more even-tempered at, you know, in their political passions. Let's talk about one issue that I see a lot is parents-to-be. You know, everything's planned these days. You know, people wait till they're like 42. Often they have to have IVF to successfully have kids. But it's very, having a kid these days is usually a pretty premeditated act, at least among the, you know, more affluent, health-conscious individuals that we speak to. What role do the omega-3s play in prenatal nutrition and in pregnancy and in early childhood? Can we speak to that?
Sure. For starters, the nervous system is constructed of DHA. It's one of the most important structural elements in the brain and in the spinal cord and in vision, in the eyes, the retina, which is really sort of the distal extension of the optic nerve, which is still part of the nervous system.
It's literally a visible part of the brain. You can look through the eye and you can actually see, you know, these are nerve cells that are, you know, kind of speak to the condition of what's happening behind the eye in the brain.
Exactly. So DHA plays an enormous role in a mother's ability to literally the miracle of pregnancy when you think about it, or if you've ever participated in it. It's an astonishing thing, really, that you conceive and then you're actually able to build this whole human being in your womb. And there are so many things that are important, but omega-3 DHA is one of those things that is critically important and has impact on the baby beyond the womb and out into childhood and beyond, where if the mother has adequate DHA, for starters, her mood is more stable through pregnancy. She is nourished well enough that the nervous system that she's building in the womb is not cannibalizing her own nervous system for the DHA, because that is what happens.
Yeah.
So we keep the mother nourished, and her DHA levels stay at a level that supports her health being optimal, and she builds a baby who is, first of all, more likely to be carried to term. That's one of the big benefits of adequate.
Right.
And
yep.
Here we mean
it actually
milligrams
reduces incidences of miscarriage and prematurity.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's been
that's
demonstrated.
Correct.
Yeah, in fact,
yes.
I actually
and that,
I'm not sure if it's important, but I actually tell my women who are taking fish oil to back off maybe a couple of weeks before term, because I just don't want them to go. You know, it's carrying a baby and going past term. It's kind of a bummer. So in an abundance
of
caution, I say, this is based on the fact that in the Faroe Islands, where they consume an enormous amount of oily fish, it's not uncommon to see 9.5 months, 10 month pregnancies. That's a part of that's a little place off of Denmark where they subsist almost wholly on fish. And fish are very beneficial for the child's brain, but maybe just that last couple of weeks, back off a little bit. And, your kid's going to be healthier, born full term, potentially smarter. Are there any studies that suggest that childhood behavior or childhood weight are influenced by maternal EPA and DHA?
Yeah. There's a trend against childhood obesity. There's a trend for better body composition, meaning more lean muscle and less body fat in kids at, say, age 4 and 5 in mothers who had adequate omega-3. There is an inverse relationship, a downward trend for things like allergies. There is, and environmental allergies even, so your baby's less likely to have a reaction to pet dander in the home or dust or mold. There's an IQ advantage all the way out to age 8. There is a dramatic improvement in the baby's ability to self-settle and sleep through the night. So your baby will be able to sleep through the night sooner if you have great DHA intake, and that is something that new parents are very, very happy about.
when I ask, when my parents to be ask me, how much EPA and DHA to take, I say, well, it's going to cost you big bucks, because if you take a moderate amount, your kid's going to go to the community college locally. If you take more, your kid's going to go to a major state college. If you take a lot, your kid's going Ivy all the way. And if you really take a lot, they'll just be in graduate school perpetually. So that's the way I phrase it.
As the mother of a graduate school student, I do have to say that there have been times when I thought
maybe you overdid it on the omega-3s.
She could argue circles around me by the time she was 6 years old. So, you know, I think I set myself up here.
Well, there you go. Okay, so too much of a good thing. All right, so, you know, clearly there are a lot of benefits. Any other areas that we want to touch upon? I mean, we could go on and on. As you said, over 35,000 studies on the benefits of omega-3, you know, inflammatory disorders, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative disorders. We certainly know a lot about the relationship between omega-3 and such conditions as dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And on it goes, right? Because it's all about the brain, and the brain is rich in these compounds.
It is. Even where we're looking into brain injury, traumatic brain injury.
Yeah. That's another military thing, because there's a guy named Michael Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah, Michael Lewis, who is has his, we've interviewed him, who believes in a concussion protocol that involves a really, you know, very aggressive dosing with omega-3. And he's administered that to athletes as well as returning vets, people who were victims of IED explosions. You know, it facilitates recovery. It's remarkable.
It does. And so it's 9 grams of a 5-to-1 DHA to EPA ratio for 1 week, and then 6 grams for the next week, and then 3 grams thereafter. And if you're in a sport or a profession where you're an at-risk individual, that 3 grams of, this is very specific, the 2,500 milligrams of DHA and 500 milligrams of EPA to make the total of 3 grams, he recommends that as a preventive. Mm-hmm. And I heard him, I was in an audience one time when he was on stage, and someone said, "Why so much?" And he said, "Tissue saturation." Mm-hmm. You are looking for tissue saturation and membrane saturation for DHA so that it is there to evolve when necessary into the docosinoids, these protectins and resolvins that can directly influence the inflammation around a site of injury and also influence the recovery from that injury. So that's an area of great promise with the omega-3s. And it might help us to talk just for a moment about bleeding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely. That's an important area because, a lot of people, they're fearful about omega-3s, especially if they're on a blood thinner or, you know, perhaps pre-surgery. So that this is an important area. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions, even among mainstream doctors.
Especially among
mainstream
doctors, if I might be so bold.
Yes.
So the person that developed the omega-3 index is also the author of the Heart Association's scientific statement on fish and fish oils and cardiovascular disease, Dr. William Harris. And Dr. Harris published a review on omega-3s and bleeding during surgery, where he had in numbers of patients in excess of 100,000, various surgeries, but most of them were things like cardiac bypass, so very invasive surgeries where the patients were not just on omega-3s, they were on omega-3s and classic blood thinner medications, and they were looking for, was there any evidence of adverse bleeding that could be attributed to the omega-3s, and there wasn't. So compared to people that were just on Coumadin or the blood thinners, the people who were also on omega-3s did not have more adverse bleeding. And in some cases, those omega-3 doses were as high as 8,000 milligrams.
Wow.
So it's just incorrect. It's just factually wrong to call omega-3s blood thinners. And it's also wrong to say that they should be discontinued before or through surgery, when in fact, in many cases, the surgeries do less damage to the organ in question when people are on things like omega-3, and CoQ10 is another example, where there's less reperfusion injury in a bypass procedure, for example. So it's just wrong to think that omega-3s function like blood thinners. They impact platelet activity, but they're not blood thinners.
Well, people on Coumadin, people who are on Plavix, people who take aspirin for prevention, but now this whole raft of new blood thinners like Pradaxa, is it going to cause people to have dangerous bleeding episodes when they take fish oil?
No. No, it's not. And it is a shame when people become afraid of fish oils because they are being counseled by a physician who's not aware of the research into the combined effects of fish oils and blood thinners. It is just a belief system that needs to be corrected. But poor Dr. Harris, I mean, he published this review and presented it at the American Heart Association's scientific sessions. I want to say it was 2007. I was in the room. There must have been 4,000 doctors in that audience. I'm not sure any of them were listening because they still all say, oh no, fish oils, you'll bruise. You know, the fish oils, you know, my patients bleed when I do blood draws, and it's just not something that can be attributed to fish oils.
Okay, well, that's reassuring to hear. We had lots more to talk about, but where can people get additional information? First, about your radio program and you.
Well, my radio program at present, Food for Thought, is on WVNJ. And you're not going to remember that. So my blog is Jolie Blogs. My first name is J-O-L-I-E, Jolie Blogs. com, and there's a link to listen live. I'm on Friday mornings at 10 a.m. There's also a podcast. I have a library of some of the shows gathered, and there's a link to that as well. And then more information about Carlson is best found at their website, which is carlsonlabs.com, and you can look at information on there. There's, I think we've got more than 250 products in the Carlson lineup these days, and there are brochures and recipe booklets for the All of Your Heart product and all kinds of interesting things at that website.
And another interesting website is the GoEd website. Can you talk about that? That's the official producers trade website.
It is. The GoEd is the global organization for EPA DHA, and they have an excellent resource for consumers and then one for physicians. The consumer resource is called Always Omega-3s, and that's the numeral 3.com. And the practitioner website, and anyone can access it, so just saying anybody that wants to dig a little deeper, it's FATS, F-A-T-S, like good fats, bad fats. It's fatsoflife.com. And there's so much great information. They do a quarterly newsletter that is just a phenomenal resource for people like you and I who are communicating.
Okay, well, so, I want to thank you very much for your decades, literally, of dedication to this field and scrupulous attention to the facts. And you certainly do your homework. So kudos to you, and I think you're clarifying a lot of important issues for the public and for health professionals in your work as a medical educator. So thanks a lot. Thanks to Carlson for supporting your efforts.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Birds of a feather, that's us. So let's just hope that we both stay healthy and are able to do this for many, many years to come.
And getting the word out. Okay, thank you so much, Jolie. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.